China shakes off its recent lethargy.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the global perspective on business and the economy. Once upon a time, the price of tea in China was a metaphor for irrelevant. Today, we live in a world where the health of China's economy is a key part of understanding the future of U.S. jobs. There's word from China today that the economy there grew faster than expected in the spring to early summer quarter. Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz is following this from Shanghai. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning, David.
After a tough quarter, one that we were reporting on, we now know that China's economy grew by 7.5% this spring, not what many economists were expecting. What is keeping China's economy going?
One word, David, stimulus. China's government has injected significantly more money into the Chinese economy in the last few months. They've spent money on more railway infrastructure, social housing projects. You just take a look outside our bureau here in Shanghai, and you can see evidence of this. Streets here are being ripped up for new sewer lines, gas lines. You know, this is all activity we haven't seen since the big stimulus package of 2008 that was launched to cope with the global financial crisis.
And as you've been reporting, Rob, that stimulus package has led to economic waste, some bad debt. Is, in a sense, China digging itself a bigger hole here?
I think that's the fear of some economists who are waiting for some more meaningful structural reforms to China's economy, but others don't see it that way. I spoke to Standard Chartered's head of China research, Stephen Green, today. He thinks this latest stimulus package is necessary.
They want to walk this sort of very delicate balance between stimulating to ensure a basic 7, 8, 9% nominal rate of GDP growth, and then on the other side, pushing through some reforms.
Some reforms like what?
Well, you know, we're still holding our breath for what these reforms will be. You know, so far, Xi Jinping's government has been too busy expelling corrupt government officials as part of a wide-ranging anti-corruption campaign, which has also had a negative impact on China's economy. But Green thinks we'll soon see China's government allowing private companies to open banks and begin lending, which would be a sign that bigger economic reforms are on their way.
All right. That's Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz in Shanghai. Thank you.
Thanks, David.
It is the day the necktie people at IBM put on an Apple-style turtleneck, or is it the other way around? In what's being billed as an exclusive partnership, International Business Machines has signed a deal with Apple to put iPhones, iPads, and lots of Apple-compatible software into the business world. IBM, known for its industrial-strength software systems, is also releasing 100 business-friendly little apps focusing on retail, healthcare, banking, travel, transportation, and telecom. Frank Gillette is an analyst with Forrester Research.
What it does is it gives them a business reason to buy Apple products as opposed to just the employee preference reason. So it sort of doubles up on why a company might choose. It's not just, hey, the employees prefer it, which is the case in the United States and in some other markets. But it also means, hey, the business advantages might even be stronger if I go with the Apple solution.
IBM releases its quarterly profit and losses tomorrow. Checking stocks now. IBM shares are up 3.5% in pre-market trading. Apple is up 2% after that announcement. The 100-share index in London is up 0.9%. DAX in Frankfurt up 1.2%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are all up. Bike-sharing programs are in more than 30 U.S. cities now, with more on the way. But there have been growing pains, including getting a hold of those heavy tamper-resistant bikes. The biggest supplier went bankrupt 6 months ago. Marketplace's Dan Weissman has the story.
A few days before Chicago's Divvy Bikes celebrated its first birthday in June, General Manager Elliot Greenberger told me how much the program's subscriber base had grown since 2014 started.
We've doubled, and it's only June right now. We continue to see people signing up about 100 a day, sometimes more.
Startups would envy this kind of growth. Programs in Washington, D.C., New York, and elsewhere have taken similar trajectories. However, Divvy was supposed to expand this spring, adding about 60% more bikes and docking stations. That's on hold. The company that supplies Divvy's equipment, Public Bike Share Company, went bankrupt in January. That company also supplies New York, D.C., Boston, Toronto, San Francisco, and other cities. Those programs are managed by Divvy's parent company, Alta Bike Share. I asked Mia Burke, an Alta executive, how long since the supplier had shipped new bikes.
Must have been pre-bankruptcy.
So no new supply for any of those cities. Programs in cities like Baltimore, Vancouver, and Portland have delayed their launch dates. The equipment includes proprietary designs, so going with another supplier isn't an easy option.
It's been a disruption. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. It's been really challenging.
Burke says Alta has been working hard to get a new supply of bikes, but new bikes probably won't arrive until 2015. Jeremiah Aoyang runs Crowd Companies.
It seems like there were some major promises made, and nobody looked closely at the financials or supply chain. That's clearly what you're seeing here. Everybody went with the one provider and overwhelmed them.
Colin Hughes studies bike share worldwide at the Institute for Transportation and Development Policy. He says public bike share's bankruptcy doesn't bother him.
There's plenty of other companies making bike share bikes. You'll maybe see the types of bikes used in some cities get thrown out, but I don't think you'll see bike sharing as a whole thrown out.
Bike sharing continues to grow worldwide. One city in China has more shared bikes than the United States as a whole. In Chicago, I'm Dan Weissman for Marketplace.
And we struggle to get you interested in the story about the manipulation of the LIBOR interest rate, despite the fact that it's the benchmark for what so many of us pay on our credit cards, car loans, and adjustable rate mortgages. If not LIBOR, how about sausage? Antitrust authorities in Germany have just fined sausage companies there the equivalent of $458 million, almost half a billion dollars, for running an illegal cartel to fix prices. 21 companies, 33 individuals. Regulators say they used to meet in a hotel to decide what to charge for sausage. Because you and I are on the same wavelength, we're each thinking, what's the worst that could happen? Sorry to say, the Financial Times beat us to that line. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.